It's February 21, 1999, and Jack Ma had welcomed a group of family and friends to his lakeside garden apartment in Hangzhou. Over the last year, the Nasdaq rocketed skyward by a remarkable 50%, driven by the surging internet revolution across the Western Hemisphere. The stark climb made onlookers excited, but insiders worried as people first saw an inevitable crash. This same volatility of excitement and fear-mongering was now barreling towards China. Embracing the uncertainty and undeterred by the risk, Jack Ma summoned this meeting to unveil his visionary concept, a digital stage for businesses to interact, trade, and grow. With his comrades huddled within the confines of the modest apartment, Jack Ma painted a vivid picture of the future. He spoke passionately about the boundless potential the internet had unleashed, a realm of unprecedented opportunities that China could scarcely have imagined. This was a chance to make a mark, to raise a voice, to be noticed. A seismic shift from the restrictive landscape of B2B commerce in China. In a country where smaller businesses had rudimentary marketing techniques and were heavily reliant on personal connections, this digital platform was a game changer. Bound by their limited reach, smaller enterprises traditionally sold their products to larger state-run businesses, who then exported overseas. Alibaba, their newly named venture, promised to dismantle this age-old framework. In the next 5 to 10 years, what will Alibaba become? Jack posed the question to everyone. Whispers and thoughtful silence filled the room before Jack broke the hush. Alibaba will become an international website. Optimism rippled through the room that day. And on April 4, 1999, Alibaba was born in Hangzhou, poised to unlock the vast digital treasures that the internet had to offer. But oblivious to the fact that the internet was not an open field of opportunity, but a startup killing ground. The arena had welcomed fierce competition, birthing the formidable trio, Sina, Sohu, and NetEase, each modeled after successful Western counterparts. Moreover, China's very own prodigies, who had ventured abroad to learn from illustrious institutions like MIT and Stanford, were returning. Termed sea turtles in Mandarin, these overseas-educated innovators stormed the Chinese digital ocean like sharks, eager, hungry, and ready to seize their share. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 2 of a 5-part series, Hidden Treasures. The idea for Alibaba developed gradually in Jack Ma's mind during his days at the helm of his fledgling startup, China Pages. Envisioned as a conduit connecting businesses to the expansive World Wide Web, China Pages provided an online presence for enterprises by designing their web pages. Although it eventually met its downfall, it served as Jack's gateway into the labyrinth of challenges faced by small and medium-sized businesses in China. After the China Pages chapter closed, Jack briefly joined a government agency. It was here that the name Alibaba materialized for two compelling reasons. First, its universal recognizability and easy pronunciation. And second, the alphabetical advantage it provided in listings. Come April 1999, Jack resigned from his government job and plunged headlong into making Alibaba a reality. Together with a plucky band of 16 colleagues and his wife, Jack assembled a formidable team of 18 co-founders. The setup was, indeed, unconventional, yet it proved to be a boon for Alibaba. From day one, the company was blessed with a sizable workforce and an uncanny understanding of the masses, thanks largely to the founders' own humble roots. In a unique gesture, Jack Ma shared equity with his team and introduced the tradition of adopting pseudonyms from a beloved Chinese fable, forging an irrevocable bond between each member and the destiny of Alibaba, both materially and spiritually. Yet, with the initial euphoria fading, Alibaba was faced with a stark reality. Optimism and a stake in a company still finding its feet could only sustain them so far. The pressing need for funding became apparent, and the race against time began. The year was 1999. Within the sleek Hong Kong offices of Investor AB, Joe Tsai's phone buzzed.
Joe, you have to meet this guy,
came the voice from the other end.
Why exactly? He's a dreamer, a visionary, and he just might be mad enough to make it happen.
The voice belonged to Jerry Wu, a Taiwanese entrepreneur who had crossed paths with Jack Ma earlier in the year. Although their initial discussions about acquiring Jerry's struggling startup had fallen through, Jack's audacious spirit had left an indelible impression on Jerry. He was convinced that Jack embodied the qualities that Joe, his friend, had been seeking. Like Jerry, Joe was Taiwanese but had spent several years in the United States earning his degree. An Ivy League-educated polymath, Joe had majored in economics and East Asian studies at Yale before studying law. Although he had a successful stint in a prestigious New York City law firm, Joe's heart longed for Asia, leading him to Investor AB, Hong Kong. The thrill of investing in and learning about startups could satisfy Joe for a while, until he decided he wanted more direct involvement. And so it became known that Joe was looking to join one.
Joe, Hangzhou is just a short flight away. Why not meet him? You never know.
Fine.
On a scorching afternoon in Hangzhou, Jack Ma welcomed Joe to his lakeside garden residence. The climb up the steep, narrow, aged, and odorous path stirred memories of Joe's grandmother's apartment in Taipei. Not exactly an auspicious beginning. The apartment was even warmer, but Joe managed. As Jack spoke passionately about his grand vision of changing the world, he also pragmatically outlined the problem.
Chinese factories lack marketing expertise, and as a result, they depend on state-owned trading companies for selling their products to the global market.
He then proposed his solution.
We offer them a platform to market their products online, eliminating the need for a middleman.
While the prospect of bypassing intermediaries was a siren song to investors, it wasn't just the idea that intrigued Joe. It was the total package. Jack's accent was reminiscent of Joe's own grandfather. And his effortless transition between English and Chinese during the pitch was captivating.
但是我永远记住一点 ，a wrong decision is better than no decision at the internet.
By the end of their meeting, Joe was leaning towards joining, but sought the counsel of friends and family just to be sure. Ultimately, he followed his instincts and joined Alibaba, accepting a significant pay cut exceeding 90% in the belief of a promising future. This gamble would eventually transform Joe into a billionaire, but in 1999, compensation was the least of his concerns. Joe's immediate task was daunting: secure urgent funding for Alibaba, or they would not last the year. Joe Tsai's task at first seemed straightforward to him. Having been seated as an investor for many deals, Joe knew he needed to file proper documentation. Yet he was confronted with the archaic and laborious paperwork system for 28,000 customers, with details painstakingly recorded in individual ledgers. Transitioning from offline to online documentation became an unexpectedly colossal undertaking. Undeterred, Joe exhibited his deep commitment to Alibaba by personally spending $20,000 to register an offshore company, thus enabling Alibaba to receive global funding. Next, the team jetted off to Silicon Valley. In the heart of American tech innovation, Joe faced the challenging task of managing Jack Ma's unconventional approach to investor pitches. Jack had grown over-reliant on his exceptional oratory skills, and he resisted the Silicon Valley tradition of using a pitch book, a tool deemed indicative of sincerity and seriousness. Unsurprisingly, their American venture ended without raising a single penny. With limited options, Joe headed back to Hong Kong to pursue potential investors, while Jack returned to Hangzhou. Meanwhile, China was experiencing a digital metamorphosis as the allure of the internet infiltrated its borders. Early venture capital investors had funneled money into online portals like Sina, Sohu, and NetEase, sparking a media frenzy to discover China's digital plans. This was Jack's arena, enchanting the media, building momentum, and generating buzz.
I don't want to be liked. I want to be respected. You need the right people with you, not the best people. Opportunities lie in the place where the complaints are.
Soon, the Los Angeles Times dubbed Jack a soundbite machine. His English language proficiency and travel experiences served him well as he navigated Western interest, underscoring his team's diversity, especially mentioning that 30% of the founding members were women, while elevating Alibaba's global ambitions. As the media flocked to Jack for his next quotable line, a fortuitous turn of events was about to transform Alibaba's fate. Back in 1994, Peter Yip, a renowned dealmaker from Hong Kong, had launched China.com through the China Internet Corporation. With his reputation, backing, and digital assets, China.com became a key player bridging East and West. To the West, they promised American online companies access to China's market. And to China's government, they pledged a censored walled garden internet. China.com emerged as a symbol of China's internet surge, attracting $34 million in investment before going public on NASDAQ in July 1999. Listed as China, the company captivated any investor intrigued by the region. Its listing price of $20 soared to $67 by the end of the trading day, culminating in a valuation of $5 billion. China.com had shown that the dot-com richest in America can be found in the East. And a floodgate of venture capitalists, banks, and financial institutions came rushing in, including Goldman Sachs. Leading the charge at Goldman was Shirley Lin, a university acquaintance of Zhou Cai. Following a phone call and a flight in September 1999, Shirley found herself in the confines of Alibaba's cramped, somewhat odorous office in Hangzhou. It was, as Shirley would describe it, as local as it gets. Much like Zhou, Shirley was taken by the palpable energy and authenticity of Jack Ma and his team. Consequently, she arranged for Goldman Sachs and its partners to invest $5 million in Alibaba for a 50% stake. This deal was a lifeline for Alibaba, lending credibility to its name. But it was also the worst valuation that Jack Ma had ever made of Alibaba in his life. A mistake that he swore to himself that he would never make again. In the subsequent months, Alibaba sprinted into action, rapidly scaling their team. By sheer chance, an unintended byproduct of China's heavy investment in education, coupled with a limited capacity of top universities, resulted in a flood of capable students into local institutions like those in Hangzhou, Alibaba's base. This talent oversupply, coupled with a less prestigious academic pedigree, made these bright minds surprisingly affordable, enabling Alibaba's team to expand exponentially. Inspired by the relentless work ethic of Silicon Valley, Jack Ma preached that a standard 8-to-5 workday would spell the end for Alibaba. To outperform American tech giants, they needed to outwork them. Consequently, both the new recruits and the existing team became swept up in the tidal wave of Jack's fervor, working 7 days a week for up to 16 hours a day, living in close proximity to the company to minimize commute times. This intense devotion laid the groundwork for a culture in many Chinese tech companies, often referred to as ROLE, a testament to their grueling working hours to stay competitive. This ethos embodied the 996 practice, working from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. While this culture fueled China's explosive growth, it also ignited stress and anxiety. But back in Hangzhou, 1999, not a single Alibaba employee had time to fixate on their troubles. They were in a fight to survive. Word of their hunger and unrelenting work ethic would eventually spread to a Japanese man, Masayoshi-san, the kingmaker of our modern tech world. It's October 1999, and Jack was invited to the Fuhua Mansion in Beijing. Masayoshi-san, who had a conversation with the president of Goldman Sachs Japan, learned of a growing technology industry in China. Known for his aggressive and reckless investment strategy, Masayoshi-san had Goldman Sachs organize a type of speed dating session between promising Chinese founders and himself. Masayoshi-san was famous within the region. Born in Japan, but educated in America. His first venture was a voice translation device, whose technology was eventually licensed to Sharp Electronics for $500,000. He would go on to make millions, then billions, and today he is a controversial figure in terms of his outsized investments and risk. Famously, he would become a kingmaker within Asia. Whomever he believed in would have so much financial support that they could outinvest, outpromote, and outperform every other competitor, eventually turning them into kings. If Jack found favor with a kingmaker, who knows where Alibaba could go?
Hi, I'm Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba, and we want to conquer the world,
Jack might have said. It was a bold statement. As he continued speaking, he spoke briefly on Alibaba's business model and their job to be done before spiraling off into his grand vision. Alibaba didn't plan to become an e-commerce titan in China. It had planned to dominate the world. 5 minutes in, Masayoshi Son was grinning. And if it wasn't for his suit, he might have even been jumping. Masayoshi Son must have seen a reflection of himself. A kindred spirit, wild, crazy with ambition, and willing to die in order to get there. Those within the room that day would explain that Jack had hit the right chord. The kingmaker was not interested in business models, but in ambitions. And Jack had shown the largest there was. 5 minutes in, Masayoshi Son would pivot the conversation from if SoftBank should invest to how much. That meeting was profound. And in the coming months, SoftBank agreed to throw in $20 million for a 30% stake in Alibaba. With a kingmaker's backing, Jack flew to Santa Clara, California, to an old acquaintance he had met years before, John Woo, a Yahoo executive, and offered him the role of chief technology officer in Alibaba. Perhaps drunk off the PR from SoftBank's investment in Alibaba, or from Jack Ma's speeches, John agreed to a 50% pay cut to leave what was considered the most popular company in Silicon Valley for a risky startup. Now bolstered by solid financial backing and leadership, Alibaba seemed destined to soar until the dot-com bubble burst. On March 13, 2000, the internet bubble in the US popped, and in the next 4 years, 50% of dot-com companies would be wiped out.
And they're seeing these big negative numbers and their confidence gets affected.
They are ping-ponging back off each other.
People are seeing this and those memories of fear are coming back.
Does it make any sense?
Proctor's trading at 60.
What the heck is going on down here?
I don't know. All of a sudden here we started hearing screaming, bye, bye, bye.
Now we're sitting down 875.
In the midst of this, Alibaba had relocated their engineering and production teams to the US in hopes of achieving global reach. Instead, they became a lightning rod for the financial shockwaves that rippled from the US to their Chinese headquarters. Internally, chaos ensued as the rapid expansion of the company collided with insufficient revenue generation. The free onboard platform, aimed at creating the largest B2B marketplace, was growing the client base, but not the revenue. Externally, Jack reassured the media, emphasizing they had only spent $5 million of their $25 million investment. He professed that the bubble burst could weed out competition, leaving Alibaba standing strong. However, behind the facade, Alibaba was staring down a harsh reality. With monthly expenses exceeding $2 million and only $10 million in the corporate account, they had a mere 5 months before all 360 employees would be left jobless. Figuring out what to do next will be tough on the Alibaba executive team, so let's give them some space. If you've enjoyed Empires so far, please give us a quick 5-star review on wherever you're listening to Empires. It'll help the podcast. Oh, looks like they're done. Let's see what's happening. In the latter half of 2000, Alibaba's leadership decided that they needed expert guidance. And that's when Savio Kwan, a 52-year-old veteran from General Electric, or GE, stepped into the frame. Hailing from Hong Kong, Kwan was an MBA graduate from London Business School with a 17-year tenure at GE. Initially skeptical about joining Alibaba, he only agreed after realizing the problem within Alibaba. He decided that it would be a great experience if he could turn their cash burn problem around. Upon joining, Kwan, along with the executive team, wasted no time in developing the B2C plan. Back to China, back to Coast, and back to Central. The intention was to rein in Alibaba's expansion, cease regional growth within China, and return to their Hangzhou roots. Recognizing the inevitable layoffs, Kwan advised Jack Ma to ignore calls from employees for the next month. Following this conversation, he and Zhou Cai flew to the U.S. to make the tough decisions. After conducting swift interviews with a 40-strong American division, he ensured all contractual compensations were met. Of the 40, only two agreed to take equity as compensation instead. The best decision in their lives. Then Savio took a returning flight and ran a coastal city loop, retrenching and closing down offices in Zhejiang, Jiangsu, Guangzhou, Fujian, and Shandong, leaving only Beijing, Shanghai, and Hangzhou. The result was a rapid restructuring, cutting employee headcount from 360 people to 150 within 30 days. Then, Kwan further tightened the belt by scrapping the marketing budget and overhauling the team composition. Higher-paid foreign employees were replaced with local talent, and non-operational roles were redirected into sales. These sales teams would push every package that Alibaba offered, eventually discovering their gold mine, which was search advertising. Turns out, every business in Alibaba wanted to appear higher and higher in the search results and would pay well over $3,000 just to be on it. While Kwan's decisions might have seemed ruthless, they ultimately ensured the survival of Alibaba and safeguarded its future, but not without shaking Jack Ma himself, who failed to take Savio's advice. Dead in the night, the vice president of Alibaba Group received a call.
Hi, Porter.
Jack solemnly spoke.
Yes?
The vice president was shocked. Never in his life had he heard the never-say-die Jack Ma sound so stressed.
Porter, I received angry calls from the staff we fired. I need to ask you, Porter. Am I a good person?
Of course, Jack. We fired the staff today to ensure that we can continue growing into the future. You are a good person, Jack.
This conversation would be recalled years later by Porter Erisman, the vice president of Alibaba Group, who would only release it to the public in 2012. But for the most part, Jack kept his nerves well hidden from the broader Alibaba Group as he continued to inspire his team, adopting a new slogan, Last Man Standing. Through his signature speeches, Jack would constantly remind his team,
even on my knees, I had to be the last man collapsing. I also believed firmly at that time that if I had difficulties, there must be someone who had worse difficulties. If I had a hard time, my opponents had an even harder time. Those who could stand and manage will win eventually.
He was right. Over the following years, more than 60% of Chinese internet companies would shut down. But Alibaba weathered the storm, only to meet its biggest opponent yet. In March 2002, eBay would invest into a startup in China named Eachnet before announcing that the country would be its next biggest priority. Alibaba's battle against eBay would become Silicon Valley lore and birth two behemoths unlike any other. Taobao, the largest e-commerce platform in China, and Alipay, the fintech company that would become larger than Goldman Sachs. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 2 of a 5-part series, Hidden Treasures. Next on Empires, we'll follow the rise of Taobao and Alipay as they prepare to fend off their greatest rival yet, eBay. Follow us so you won't miss out on episode 3 of our 5-part series, Shark in the Ocean. Is a 1UP Media original, produced and edited by Guang Jin, audio experienced by Ethan Sam, and narrated by Louise Cruz. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.